He was forcibly jumping backwards, smashing it down with his back.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan, and I'm here with the ever-present Adam.
Alan, my goodness, mate.
Physically holding hands, listeners to just the audio, wherever you get your podcasts, you won't be able to experience the full gravity of this moment. But Adam is here in the same room as me, physically 15 centimeters away. I can touch him on the arm. I can gaze at him in his eyes. Adam, we're here. You're in India. You're in Mumbai. You came.
I'm experiencing the heat firsthand, mate. And listeners to the podcast will know that over the last few episodes, you've been talking about just how oppressively hot and humid it is. And now we're both in Mumbai together. I can attest to it. It's
sweltering, yeah, isn't it?
It's borderline unbearable. I think we've very strategically chosen a time to record in the day when we couldn't bear to be outside.
Yeah, I think you've properly come to terms with the fact that it's almost just uninhabitable to experience during the day. You've got to sort of stay inside, haven't you? I took you on a little walk yesterday. You began melting. You were like, your back of your neck was burning. You were crying. You were booking flights home. It was right.
Yeah, everyone was staring at me because I'd pulled my t-shirt up over my head to expose the Tripology logo on my back, obviously.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have called it a little walk. I mean, we were out for a good couple of hours, weren't we, in flip-flops across the beach. Juhu Beach we ended up at. Lovely place.
What are your first impressions of India like? I picked you up from the airport yesterday.
Yeah.
Jet-lagged.
Yeah.
You slept well?
Didn't sleep at all on the plane, actually. Worst turbulence of my life, I would have said. I don't know if that route typically, I went Heathrow to Mumbai. Do you know where the typically experiences a lot of turbulence, that route?
I have no idea about that.
It was through the night as well, the flight. So, I mean, prime time, really, isn't it? If you're going to go on a 9-hour flight, 8 hours and 55 minutes, ended up being 8 hours and 11 minutes, score.
I was impressed that you took a direct flight. I think that was a surprise to me. I've never taken a direct flight in my whole travel career. You just zoomed all the way here.
Well, I was having a chat with old Mumsy, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And I was looking at all the flights, the available ones and the ones that maybe fit the bill. And we're talking about possibly a difference of £100, perhaps. And I thought, well, also, it's important to look at what the other options were, right? The other options typically are you go through places like Istanbul or Germany, maybe, or Italy as well, and then on to somewhere like Abu Dhabi, perhaps, and then on to Delhi, or you can go Delhi, then on to Mumbai. And I just thought, for the sake of £100 or £150, however much it would have been, that's a lot of time lost and a lot of faff and a lot of potential delays.
Yeah. I was glad for it because we had this amazing situation where you were flying indirect and I was taking a train from Kerala and we were sort of from two different directions making a sort of continuous line towards the central point of Mumbai. I had a nice train journey. I mean, it wasn't anywhere near as turbulent or as crazy as yours, but...
And your first one was delayed, at least one train, wasn't it? Or even cancelled.
2 hours delayed, yeah.
And the first one was cancelled, wasn't it? Because you were going to come here on a...
Booked a ticket, the train was cancelled, booked a new ticket, came on that, it was delayed. It was nice though, it was all okay.
Yeah.
I knew we were zooming towards Tripology incarnate. Very much a new season of Tripology.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should address that. This is like phase three, isn't it?
Yeah, phase one, of course, distance within Canada, but doing the podcast remotely. Phase two, together in Canada, recording a new era where I went off traveling then and we were zooming about all over the shop. And now phase three, I mean, a lot of fans would have been able to guess. It's us traveling together in the subcontinent of India.
I know. And it's just amazing how many interactions we now have together, both me and you and people we don't know, people that we're meeting on the way, and the opportunity to create content, to create episodes, to brainstorm ideas, no time difference, which is something that's really difficult to get across to people. You know, when I was in Canada and you were in India and Sri Lanka, the time difference was 13 and a half hours, which is not always conducive to even making a phone call, let alone recording a 45-minute podcast.
There's trials and tribulations that have been associated with this podcast since time immemorial.
Yeah, but yeah.
What an amazing opportunity this is now to just experience rapid growth. Whatever the podcast has been, now it's sort of made its metamorphosis like a Frank Kafka novel. We've finally woken up as that grotesque beetle of travel nonsense. We're going to be traveling. Have you read Franz Kafka Metamorphosis? Otherwise, the beetle thing makes no sense. If it's a novel, someone wakes up as a beetle. It's very beautiful. We're now, you know, parading around together, traveling. Think of the experiences we can have. Think of the videos we can create, the content. I've forgotten how to make podcasts with you in person.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're not wrong.
I'm still thinking of you as a digital entity sort of existing beyond, but you're actually here.
I know, it is strange for us to, what are we on, like episode 69, 70, something like that now, 69? That was a Patreon episode 69, wasn't it, Alan?
Yeah, it's straight to Patreon.
You got to pay for that one, guys.
Patreon.com/Tripology Podcast.
but the commitment, the fact that sort of a year ago or 18 months ago, we made a commitment to one another to create this podcast. And then everything that's happened since then, I think it goes to show, like, it's what you can do is so amazing when there's dedication and consistency. And it doesn't matter if logistically it's very difficult or there's, I don't know, what would you call some of the Wi-Fi signals we've had of late? I mean,
much like your
non-existent
flight, turbulent.
Yeah.
But look, new era. Thank you to the Tripologists who have been with us since the start, because
yes,
there are several of you. Thanks to the Tripologists.
Thanks, Mum.
Who have joined the journey later on, because there are many of you. But I mean, welcome to the Tripologists that are joining us now in the third era of Tripological wonder.
Yeah, I mean, know this, we're not going anywhere, and we hope that you come with us. We're going to be traveling around India for goodness knows how long and doing some wonderful things along the way. So please subscribe, please join us on the journey, send us a message, and we look forward to hearing from you.
We're committed. We're going to be the most groundbreaking travel podcast in the space. We're going to change lives, both our own, the listeners, and maybe some of the people we meet. It's going to be a crazy era.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. And it has been a long time coming, mate. I mean, I might
take my top off for some of it. It's hot, you know? The weather's hot. So we'll see.
I'm so happy to be here. And, you know, the fact that I have been here about 24 hours, I am a little bit jet lagged. I'm tired. The dorm that we're sleeping in has 13 other people in it.
I think we need to maybe take a look at these Indian dorm rooms and do somewhat of an expose about it. Maybe on the next episode of Tripology.
Yeah, I can take some covert videos, some sort of fly-on-the-wall shots.
Yeah, Adam's in charge of covert videos for this era of Tripology. He'll be wearing a sort of contraption that I've manufactured for him, snooping around. And I'll be in charge of, I guess, just, I'm going to ask you questions. What kind of things have you captured on your covert? Maybe we'll do a little covert video item. It's going to be really beautiful out here. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm acclimatized to Indian time zones. I will not jet lagged at all.
Yeah.
I slept for 12 hours on that train.
What, how long was the train journey in total?
24 hours. And I was unconscious for half of it.
Hang on. The train journey for you to get to Mumbai to meet me was 24 hours long.
It was.
How fast was the train going? We can just say slow, medium, or fast.
No, can I step outside of your threshold there? The train is actually called the Super Fast.
Wow. Okay.
And it's 24 hours. So,
yeah, I wouldn't know. Does it sort of speed up at certain points? I'm basically
the super slow is still coming. Now they left at the same time. Still on its way.
We will have to wait for episode 75 for those passengers. But yeah, I'm comparing it to the Trans-Siberian, and along the way, I mean, I was taking different trains. It has to be said, but you can choose either a really local slow train, which is a certain price, and then a much faster train, which is obviously more expensive.
Yeah, this is called the bi-weekly super fast.
Right,
it leaves on Monday and on Wednesday.
Okay.
And it goes from Kerala to Mumbai. Very local.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like there's three tiers, you know?
Right.
AC throughout the train, but then you're sleeping on like three tiers like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the middle tier.
Middle tier, not the bottom tier, guys.
No, but the bottom tier is preferable. You know, you're sleeping on the bottom. You're close to the ground. You can get off. You can go to the bathroom. For me to go to the bathroom, I had to like climb down.
Sure.
Stepping on the bottom tier's bed. to get to the floor.
Are they all the same price, do you know?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You choose AC3 tier.
Okay.
There's also AC2 tier.
Right.
Which is more expensive.
Because you can either only get the top or the bottom.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. You understand. So,
I've only been here a day.
Yeah, and he's already cottoned onto the lingo. So, yeah, AC3 tier, yeah?
Okay.
The food available on the table, people come round. They're like, you know,
oh, oh really?
Bread omelette, biryani.
Yeah.
Perhaps, would you like samosa, another common one? No to all of those things. I had some pistachios.
Hang on a minute. So, are you eating what's delivered inside the carriage? There's not a restaurant carriage that you know of?
No. And, you know, I really enjoy those sort of like Agatha Christie style scenarios where there's like a train with a dining car.
Yeah.
For 24-hour train journey, that would be really beneficial. But no, for this, it was very much a situation where there was just a man with a crate of food and
sure.
a man with a like a urn full of chai, and those two would just walk up and down offering them to the passengers.
That's amazing. So, I mean, the question on everyone's lips is, are you a good sleeper, or were the sleeping conditions optimal?
I think I was sleep deprived.
Oh, right. It was
coming
pure
into the situation.
Fatigue, extreme fatigue.
Just exhaustion, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I've said I have vehicular somnambulism, buses and trains, I'm good at. Planes, not so much. And that was the situation that you found yourself in.
It was. And I've got maybe a controversial topic. Okay. So the gentleman in front of me on the plane put his chair back immediately, even before takeoff.
Hate that.
Yeah, okay. So we're probably going to agree on this. But listeners, just bear with me and then send us a message and let me know what you think. Because the gentleman in front of me moved his chair back and was almost squashing me. I was quite surprised at how far the chair folded back because it was touching my knees.
Is this a regulation, Boeing 737? Because the chairs go quite far back.
Yeah, he was forcibly jumping backwards, smashing it down with his back. And then the lady, lovely lady, came around and said, excuse me, sir, we haven't taken off yet. You need to put your chair upright. And then as soon as the thing was in the air, I mean, it's straight back again. And I was so riled by this. Even when the meals were delivered, he moved forward so that he could reach his tray where his food was, but didn't move his chair forward. So my tray was almost cutting into my stomach. It was so close.
He's a clinical sociopath.
And I said to the lady next to me that might feature on one of the podcasts in the future, do you think I should just tap him on the shoulder and say, excuse me, mate? Do you mind, please, if you move your seat forward? Because I'm not enjoying the flight as a result. And he was so aggressive with having the seat back. I thought, if he says no, that's going to make this flight really awkward.
Yeah.
So
he'd find a way to like notch it back one step further still.
Yeah. So I don't know. I left it. But what it did do is kickstarted this thought train. And I thought, would it be that bad if the chairs didn't move on a flight?
Strong views about this, mate. I actually think that the plane seats, planes in general, but specifically these seats, they're like almost a microcosm of society in some sense.
Right.
Because the people at the front, they can move their chairs back.
Yes.
Consequence free. The
people totally.
At the very, very front.
Yeah. No repercussions whatsoever.
The people behind them, they're forced to move their chairs back in response to the people in front of them.
Yes.
So you have this domino
in order
effect.
To keep to the amount of room proportion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's say you lose 20% of your oval room, but you get it back by leaning your own chair back.
Sure.
This continues all the way back.
Quite a literal domino effect.
Absolutely. Until the very, very back of the plane.
Yeah.
Where the person who gets moved back upon and their space is encroached.
Yeah, yeah.
Has no recourse.
They're up against a wall usually, aren't they?
Exactly.
Right.
So at any point.
Yeah.
Someone in that line can make a decision, can take a stand to cop their encroached space in order to save the person behind them and stop the madness that's going on.
Excuse me. Potentially the people behind them. I mean, depending on how far up the queue they are, up the plane, they're doing all of the people behind them a favour.
Yeah, you can take a stand at any point and be like, I mean, almost in a Christ-like way. I'm going to have this suffering put upon me, but I will save the people behind me.
Yeah.
Let's call them followers.
Yeah.
from hardship. So you can make that stand at any point. I don't know, don't want to blow my own proverbial trumpet, but sometimes I'll do that.
Okay.
I've done that before. I've just copped it.
And then you walk 8 rows back and say to the person, I hope you're enjoying the flight, because eight rows in front, I did you a favor. And you don't know who I am. I've done that out of the goodness of my heart.
And when we stand up at all, I have like a very mournful expression on my face and I just look them in the eye. Yep.
So,
you know that comfort you enjoyed on this flight?
Yeah. How was your flight, sir? You stand, you know, when you exit the plane and all the air hostesses and the pilot are standing there. Thank you very much, sir. Yeah,
I hope you shake hands with everyone from 34C onwards.
Yeah, wicked. That's funny. But what I'm saying is, do we think it would be that bad if airlines all got together with maybe Boeing or any other manufacturers of planes and they said, look, the dynamics within a plane are so that if people start moving their chair back, it really irritates the other passengers. Mm. And then, you know, we're seeing a drop in sales as a result. Maybe I've made that bit up. But I think, would people then get on the plane and try and move the chair back? Or maybe you announce it to the public, I don't know. But are people going to stop flying because they have to be in an upright position the entire time? Because you have to do a takeoff, you have to at landing. You should, really, when you're eating. I mean, how much comfort is a flight anyway?
You know, the thing that's the problem here is I listened to an interview with the CEO of Ryanair.
Yes.
And he cares so little about the comfort on the plane.
Right.
He was like campaigning for standing sections to be introduced on planes.
Right.
He was like, it's safe.
If it is safe.
It will be cheap.
Yeah.
And people will buy it. He was like, people care more about going cheaply than they do about comfort of any kind. So let them stand. He was going to remove the toilets on planes and then have additional seating. He was like, you can get 6 extra rows in.
Can you?
Apparently, that's what he reckons.
That's a lot of extra money.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. I tell you what, it's that kind of horrendous desperation for hard cash that makes me want to step out of this material world and go on a brief meditation break.
I'm coming with you, right, quite literally.
And like a falcon returning from a hunt back to the precipice of a mountain where it will enjoy a bountiful meal, here I am returning to the conscious world after that brief meditation break. And here I am, not just on my own, connecting over the airwaves digitally using broadband. I'm here physically with my best friend, confidant, companion, travel compadre, tripologist, and, you know, one of the greatest damn travelers the world's ever seen. It's Adam.
It's me. I'm back. It feels good to be back.
We were just having a roast of Ryanair CEOs in the meditation break then, telepathically, whilst meditating, whilst doing Vipassana, Anapanasati. We were just thinking about it. And there we go. Adam, I mean, are you enjoying India so far still?
I am. I do, you know, I am conscious of the fact that you asked me what my first impressions are and have been, and I didn't answer that. So what I would say is that maybe I've been living vicariously through you, and I've seen so much content about India and India travel. I've got some good friends that have traveled India for a long time as well, and nothing has surprised me as of yet, I don't think. So we went on a tuk-tuk ride yesterday, didn't we, from the airport?
Yes.
And I've got to say, it was so stimulating, that tuk-tuk ride. It was exactly what I needed.
We tipped him well.
Don't worry, that one's on us. But you know, it's hard to replicate that, I think. It's just such a wonderful experience to be ripping around the roads. There's things everywhere. The roads are falling apart in some places. It's busy. There are 20 different types of vehicles whizzing around. And I love that. It's invigorating for me. And I think that's what India's going to be honest.
I think Mumbai is quite a nice place to enter India. Like for me, I had the soft entry in that I was in sort of South Asia, I was in Nepal, and then came straight to Delhi. And Delhi's kind of like a big megalithic city with smog and everything is kind of crazy. And I sped run down south very quickly. We're kind of just holing up in Mumbai and kind of launching this podcast into the stratosphere for a while.
So cracking
it's nice
on,
to I think it's a good entry for you. We went out and got some street food last night, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah. And it.
How are you feeling after that? Because obviously there's a big kind of claim made by a lot of travelers.
Yeah.
Delhi belly, the often quoted term. The idea that you go to India, partake of the street food, and instantly you're sort of colonically irrigating yourself across the city.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we're nothing if not honest. So I'm going to give you an honest answer to your honest question.
Yeah.
This morning was interesting. I mean, you know full well I spent an awful long time in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because you were waiting for me in the common room. And I feel, you know, I should have texted you, really. I mean, it was that long that it needed addressing.
Yeah. It was a long time.
Yeah, because the call was, Adam, from you know, down the other end of the bathroom. Are you in here? Yeah. Are you showering?
Yeah.
No, I should be. but it wasn't too dissimilar to the sort of thing that might have happened in Mexico after a day of eating
out. Oh, so you did suffer from the street food then?
Well, I wouldn't call it suffering, though. Like, I mean, it's just part of the course, isn't it?
Okay. Well, I didn't have any symptoms at all, but I didn't partake of the tandoori chicken that you partaked of.
Oh, so yeah, we did this kind of little control group thing.
Do you think that's what did it?
Well, no, I don't know.
Or do
maybe
you think I'm just, like, my microbiome is just...
Maybe, perhaps. Because we've been drinking the same water as each other, actually, and we ate exactly the same food. We shared the food. You know, that's one of the good things about traveling with a loved one, is that you can order twice the amount and then cut it in half.
I've been introducing to the joys of Thali every single day, a Thali a day.
Do you think that you've gone through so much food in Nepal, India, and Sri Lanka that you've now kind of settled on what is best for you, given that, because you're someone who likes variety, aren't you? And a Thali, you just can't go wrong in some of these
changes,
places.
Well, it changes, like, location-wise, right? Like, there's different things that are good in different places. Like, Kerala's obviously, like, the seafood's amazing, so you'd partake more of that. In Sri Lanka, you can't walk 100 metres without having a coconut sambal offered to you in 1,000 different ways. But I think a Thali is a great dish.
Yeah.
Because it's a multitude of dishes, and the bang for your buck. There's so much food in a Thali as compared to anything else on the menu.
And it's worth saying that we've had a couple since being together in the last 24 hours that you've said is actually quite expensive, in relation to
that's
what
just
else
Mumbai,
you...
yeah.
Yeah, it's just Mumbai. And they've still been very cheap, but both very good.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that one we had today was brilliant. It was like $3,
yeah.
300 rupees.
Yeah, and it was it was a whole fish fried.
Yeah.
And then we had dosa, and we had sort of two curries or dips with some other little really small fried fish jobbies. And I just love, it's almost ritualistic. It's like, you know, eating and dipping, and you take your time and you have a little bit of that and then a little bit of that one. And you can kind of make your own thing up, can't you? You can do the permutations of the same thing many different ways. And
absolutely. I mean, this is food talk. We have a food item in the podcast.
We do.
We should just whack all this stuff within the item, bundle it up. It's rice for breakfast. Play the theme music.
Rice for breakfast. You can't have rice for breakfast.
Yeah, rice for breakfast is your food item on Tropology. So you were saying?
So I was saying that I really like the way that you eat Thalis as well. Often with your hand, tearing off a bit of bread or dosa or whatever it might be, dipping it in sauces and that kind of stuff. It's just I like the method in which you eat, or that kind of format. I find it really connects you to what it is you're eating.
Yeah, definitely. There's an aspect. I was hanging around with this amazing Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
Do they call them Carolyns? Person from Kerala.
Yeah.
And she was taking me to some super, super local spots. She taught me like the proper way of eating with your hands, you know, using your thumb for leverage.
Totally, yeah.
And I really do think it puts you in touch with your food.
Mm.
I know now there's a lot of Indian people who's in a post-COVID era, they go, oh, maybe eating with our hands isn't the best. Maybe we'll use cutlery. So now often if they see foreigners come in, they'll just give them cutlery, even if that previously wasn't available.
Yeah, yeah.
I think travelers going to India should really try and get on the old hand vibe, because curry is the one thing that you wouldn't think is intuitive to eat with your hands.
Mm.
Rice and curry.
Yeah.
You know, these things very much require a spoon to our Western minds. But I get your hands in there. It's fun to eat rice and curry with a hand.
It is. And
preferably your own.
And it totally does connect you to your food. And yeah, like, you know, it might feel a little bit strange at first, But I think there's more to it than just eating with your hand or eating with a fork. I think there's certainly a connection that you're unable to achieve with a piece of cutlery.
I'm almost of the opinion that the ideal way to eat any food is the method by which that food has been eaten for the longest period of time.
Yeah.
Chopsticks for a ramen.
Yeah, yeah. Apart from the soup, if you want to eat some of the soup, but you can just pick the bowl up, I suppose. It's noodles. Yeah, noodles. I mean,
I think
then
if you're
you've got spaghetti with a fork, though, which kind of throws a spanner in the works to some degree.
I don't know, because I think like in China, you should be eating with chopsticks with your hand down the long end of the chopstick, as is done by the Chinese. In Vietnam, you should move your hands forward, inch them forward, have them there, as is done by the Vietnamese. There's a way to eat things. In Korea, metal chopsticks, you know?
Just,
switch it up.
Yeah, just copy the local.
Fish
blend
and chips.
In.
Eat it from a newspaper. You know how we do.
While we're on this topic, mate, even though it might be a little bit out of left field.
Okay. Are we leaving India?
We're not leaving India just yet, but okay. Food-wise we are, because I've had something very recently that I would love to discuss with you. And I think we've got the time. But what I'm going to do to you, to again, patreon.com/Travology. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to describe the food and you have to tell me. We can either, this is your choice, either which country you think it comes from or which continent.
Okay. First one then the other.
Okay. So the food is, imagine a sandwich. It's toasted. So
the UK.
Yeah. So this, it comes in that kind of format. It's a sandwich, two pieces of toasted bread. Inside the bread is often three different types of meat. It could be a spiced sausage, some roast steak.
Yeah.
It could be local sausage and then a slice of cheese as well, often.
Oh.
And then this is where it gets so crazy. The sandwich is submerged in sauce. Oh. That is not too dissimilar to a soup. Imagine putting that sandwich inside a soup.
Like a vat of liquid.
That is flavoured. It's served to you in a bowl where there's kind of a moat of soup going around this sandwich, but it's poured on top.
Yeah.
And then there's some cheese on top as well, and often an egg on top of that.
Nice.
Now, I'm all for eating things with your hands. That does get a little bit difficult. So I ate it with a knife and fork.
Right.
Now,
and then what? Drank the soup afterwards?
Or with a spoon. Hmm. And it's often served.
So you did the triumvirate. You did all three. Soup, spoon,
yeah.
Fork, knife.
Anything left, I ate with the chopsticks.
Yeah.
But it's also often served with fries, French fries, chips, for our UK listeners. And you kind of use the sauce as the dip for the chip. And it's tomato flavoured, often with a bit of beer in there as well. It's like a meaty, tomato-y gravy.
Okay, I'm into
it. If you like. And what I'm going to do, just to distort things ever so slightly, is I'm going to tell you that these things often exceed 2,500 calories in one dish.
Crikey.
So we're talking different types of meat cheese in a toasted sandwich with more cheese and the sauce and an egg.
Mm.
Eating it with fries.
Mm.
Where do you think that comes from?
Shall I show you my workings?
Go on.
I don't think. I mean, look, when you're mentioning like bread and cheese and all this stuff, you're taking me out of Asia, really.
Right.
Frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
There is some bread and cheese in Asia, but it's, you know, you have to go to Vietnam to get like French colonialism bread and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you're taking me out of Asia. Europe's a contender. I mean, the sandwich. Born in Europe, of course.
Yeah.
The Earl of Sandwich.
Fair point.
There's cheese there.
Yeah.
The calories. That's a very North American caloric thing you've mentioned. It's making me think that only an American could be devious enough to create such a kind of thing.
Because look, I hope I don't offend any of the people listening to this podcast. No doubt I will.
Mm.
But I would say that creation is nothing short of maybe a child's drawing.
Yeah.
If you asked an 8-year-old kid what they wanted for dinner, they would probably come up with something similar. It's like a caricature. It's an abomination, to be honest with you. It's so insane.
It is North American, isn't it?
I was certain you would go with North American.
But it isn't.
No, it isn't.
So it's European.
It is European.
Yeah. Okay. It was either one or the other. And if it's not, I mean, if it's American, it's because they've taken a delicate idea from Europe and abominized it. Okay, so it's European.
But you are right, though, because I'm sure the people listening to this, when I was describing it, at every stage, you go, hang on, it's getting more and more ridiculous.
Mm.
Even to the point where the fries get added. right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I saw this thing on the menu, and I watched a couple of YouTube videos as well, I thought, I know I'm going to eat that, but it is quite ridiculous. Who invented this? I'm not too sure. But it's been around for a very long time, and it's incredibly popular.
What's it called, this dish?
It's called the francesinha.
Okay. And where's it from?
It's from Portugal, specifically originated in Porto.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the story goes, as the name would suggest, that a Portuguese guy went over to France, and there's something similar in the area of France that he was in. I don't know of it, I don't think, but he wanted to create a similar sandwich when he came back and basically pimp it up. Mm. And the Portuguese, they like their meat.
A similar thing was done when an Australian visited the UK with the Penguin Bar that later became the Tim Tam.
The Tim Tam. Mm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you could probably eat an entire packet of Tim Tams and it still wouldn't be 2,500 calories, would it?
There's a history, isn't there, though, of people going to a country, observing a popular product and being like, oh, how can we just soup this up to within an inch of its life?
Yeah.
And this was done by the Portuguese.
Yeah, maybe in more ways than one, but I don't know enough about the history to go
into
it.
Yeah.
So, that's not the only thing they took for it. No. I think what it comes down to is that is, for me, is just so typical of North American food. And maybe that's unfair, but I have lived in North America. I lived in Canada for a long time, and I've traveled around the US. And I'm going to risk offending people, but there's no refinement there, in my opinion.
Mm.
It's just been added to. What can we do to make this more calorific and bigger and better than what it was before? And it was, I'll be honest, I hold my hands up, it was delicious, Alan.
Yeah?
It was too much food.
You liked it?
It was too much food. I ate an entire one to myself and then some chips as well for the sauce.
There is something nice about abundance in cuisine. I know it's like, kind of goes away that ethos of, you know, oh, just a tiny, delicate Michelin star piece. But there's something nice about a buffet sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
There's something nice about the fact that American food is all about abundance. There's something nice about a feijoada in Brazil, you know? It's like lots of different types of fried things.
Yeah.
There is something beautiful about that. But you enjoyed it. You liked it.
I did. It's important to add, and this is something that we've spoken about already in my short time here, I did my research.
Mm.
You know, I watched a lot of YouTube videos about the best francesinha in Porto, and I also got recommendations from locals and that kind of thing, whittled it down and managed to find one that a few people had recommended. So I went for it. And it was very good. I think if you eat something that is like that, that contains so many different ingredients, I think that if you were to consume that amount of calories and it be awful.
Mm.
You know, I felt full afterwards.
Yeah, but you didn't feel like dirty on the inside.
No,
if you'd consumed that amount of calories worth of Cadbury.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say definitely eat one if you go to Porto.
Mm.
Maybe you can get one in Lisbon, I'm sure, but maybe if you go to Porto, because that's its kind of spiritual home and where it was invented. And yeah, get a good one and enjoy it. You can share it. I mean, it's a lot. It really is a lot of food. You can see it as kind of a food challenge, I suppose. But definitely still get one and definitely search out a good one is what I would say.
Yeah. And listeners can be excited, I think, because there'll be many food adventures to come on Tripology Podcast from here on out. You can follow along with the adventures on, we'll have them all over Instagram.com/Tripology Podcast. You know, there'll be food stuff, won't there? There'll be a lot of rice for breakfast. There'll be a lot of content that away. So I'm just excited about where this goes, man. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's quite funny. I've just remembered, actually, there was a guy that did the walking tour for us around Porto, and he high-fived a few people that had said they had already had a francesinha and finished it in its entirety. So it was clearly sort of a challenge. And then one girl in the group, she said, yeah, I just ate it for breakfast and then didn't eat anything for the rest of the day. And he was horrified. He was like, no, it's not about allocation of calories. You eat it as a meal and then you just get on with your day. You can't just substitute it in for your
for everything.
Yeah.
Well, you can in a way, can you?
Yeah, I think he was just a little bit offended.
I'm a big fan of the tali, one tali a day.
Keeps the
calorie cravings away. Just carry on then, march off into the future. And speaking of marching into the future, I don't know about you, but you're here.
I'm here.
And that's nice.
It's really nice.
I don't want to talk to you anymore.
It's hot.
Let's blast off into next week and we'll talk again.
Amazing.
Adventures
abound. I'll see you there.
Bye.